Committee, look at the 100,000 pages of documents about his role in the Bush administration in relationship to torture and other important issues.
Do you think that it would have been preferable, you know, not to have this testimony at this time, but instead to wait to have an investigation prior to hearing from Blasey Ford, from potentially Julie Swetnick, from potentially Deborah Ramirez, or to hear from the women first and then have an investigation?
The norm, which they did with Anita Hill, was to have an FBI investigation. That the Republicans are refusing it is further evidence that they don't care and they don't want to know what happens. And there's been a lot of rather shocking statements by conservative and right-wing Republican men, including a lot of elected officials, that they don't really care if he raped people or not, or assaulted people or not. And, you know, I had assumed that they would defend him on the grounds that they don't believe he did this, but they're really putting out, in many cases, a boys will be boys. Brett Stevens, the awful New York Times columnist, called all this antics in the New York Times this morning. And so they don't really care. They don't really want to know. They're trying to look legitimate while railroading it all through.
So far, Senator Feinstein is the only person who has addressed the issue at all of institutional failure. She said at the top with her introduction that institutions have failed women and continue to make it far more difficult than it should be to be supported to bring forward accusations such as these. Do you feel, Rebecca, that this moment is setting things forward or back?
It feels like we're just where we have been so often. It doesn't feel like it's doing either, but one of the things I've been seeing is that this is like so many trials I've read about, heard about, where essentially the victim is the one who's on trial, you know, where it's not just a sense, you know, where she's being discredited, she's essentially being treated as the criminal, and the fact that a prosecutor is examining her, doesn't help.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that it's clearly an unprecedented structure to have there be a prosecutor in this manner. I mean, do you think that we're getting the information that should be being brought forth, though, in any case, about what potentially took place?
And all this stuff about whether Dr. Blasey Ford is afraid to fly on airplanes and things like that is just attempting to undermine her credibility and avoid discussing what actually happened at that party when she was 15 and what the evidence is, whether there are corroborating people. You know, if they really wanted to know, they could subpoena Mark Judge, who was the co-attacker. And there's so much evidence supporting this that third witness who came forward yesterday, the client of Michael Avenatti, talks about gang rapes that Kavanaugh and Judge were connected to. Somebody in the New Yorker piece that appeared about Deborah Ramirez talked about Mark Judge confessing to gang rape to her. And so there's a lot of stuff they could look at if they actually wanted to know, and clearly they don't. And since they control the judiciary, the Democrats are having to play by their rules and doing the best they can.
Yeah, we're very much not going beyond the testimony of Dr. Blasey Ford, not whether or not other people have been able to support and corroborate it. We're obviously not hearing any of the incredibly shocking declaration that was a sworn declaration signed by Julie Swetnick, and we're not hearing the accusations also put forward by Deborah Ramirez, except for in passing, again, when Senator Feinstein mentioned them at the top of the hearing. Perhaps other Democrats will bring these up, but it doesn't appear that that's what's going to be going to happen thus far. Sonali, did you want to add and or ask Rebecca any questions?
You know, one of the things that is striking me is we're seeing Dr. Ford go first, of course, and that means that what's coming is going to be really interesting. Republicans are holding back right now because they don't want to be seen as a bunch of men ganging up on Dr. Blasey Ford, as happened with Anita Hill. What's going to happen when Kavanaugh takes to the stand? You're going to hear, I think, their strategy is going to be, we're not going to attack Dr. Ford, but we're going to shower Kavanaugh with support, and it's going to end up being what's coming next, I think, is going to end up being this, you know, patting on the back. Look what a pious Christian Catholic man he is. And I'd love to know what Rebecca Solnit thinks may happen when Kavanaugh takes the stand, from her experience seeing men support other men in the face of women's truth.
And it's also amazing that this is happening, because Kavanaugh has repeatedly demonstrated that he's an evasive, dishonest, and sometimes outright lying person. And the conversation he had with Senator Kamala Harris was really stunning, where she asked him a really simple question: did you have a conversation with somebody at this law firm? And he spent 10 minutes trying to avoid saying yes or no, and just writhing like a worm on a hook. So he appears to have lied in a lot of different capacities. And so even though every time a woman accuses a man of sexual misconduct, her credibility is put on the line, whether it's Anita Hill or any woman since then, the idea that Brett Kavanaugh has credibility seems kind of ridiculous to me at this point. And, you know, so the fact that we're all supposed to pretend that this is an honest man whose word is worth something rather than a confirmed liar is part of how tortured the truth is under patriarchy, under the Trump administration.
Yeah, and I think you both bring up a good point, which is, you know, in the second part, when it is Brett Kavanaugh, that would certainly present also an opportunity for the Democrats to bring up the other charges against him brought by the other women, and also other parts of his record, as you say, Rebecca, that have, you know, that have raised the questions of his ability to tell the truth or not in front of different Senate hearings over the years, and to the United States Senate over the years, about his record. And to, you know, recall that he is someone who is a very internal, extreme right-wing member of the right-wing establishment, right-wing legal system, and there's a lot of his record that hasn't been entirely brought to the fore. We now have another guest that we are bringing on with us, and we are happy to bring on with us now Alicia Garza. She is the co-founder of Black Lives Matter. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
So can you also provide us with your initial views after watching the first 3 hours of this testimony?
Well, first and foremost, I just have to say that Dr. Ford is incredibly courageous and steadfast in the face of what is certainly a shameful interrogation of her experiences, of her credibility, and of her integrity. And I just feel like we need to just say very clearly that we are proud of her and we support her, and that what she's doing is incredibly courageous, and she is sacrificing a lot for the sake of our democracy, but also for the sake of telling the truth. And so that should be really lifted up.
And, you know, to the question of comparing this to Anita Hill's experience in 1991 and the national experience of Anita Hill in 1991. What are your thoughts on that, Alicia Garza?
Well, let me say that I remember watching the hearings of Anita Hill, and I was about 9 years old. And the memories that are coming back to me right now as I watch this hearing are quite phenomenal. One thing that I do think is shifting, and this is important because this was spearheaded by the Black feminist organizing and support of Anita Hill, is that it's not taking us as long to get it together around making sure that not only do we stand in support of Dr. Ford, that we call forward the legacy of the courage and the bravery that Professor Hill exhibited, but that we also engage men in this conversation. Because quite frankly, as a woman, and I'm watching this and I'm enraged, as a survivor, I'm enraged. And one of the things that comes up for me often is, where are the men of goodwill? Where are the men of good integrity, the men of good practice, who are also enraged? And I'm really honored to have been a part of a process and a campaign to really ask men to step forward and to step up, to tell other men that it is important to listen to women, it is important to believe survivors, and it's important that we don't kind of engage these dynamics where we put the bad behavior of men on the back burner to protect their reputations, while the lives and livelihood of women are forever impacted by instances and patterns and practices of sexual violence and sexual assault.
And again, that's Alicia Garza. She's the principal of the Black Futures Lab, strategy and partnership director of the National Domestic Workers Alliance, and co-founder of Black Lives Matter. I want to put the same question to you, Alicia, that I put to Rebecca. Do you think this moment, after watching just the first 3 hours, is putting us forward or backwards for real meaningful national institutional change?
Well, I think it depends on who we're classifying as the us. Mm. One thing that's very clear here is that the GOP has lost its way. And frankly, this isn't about Democrats or Republicans, right? This is about the agenda that the GOP has aligned itself around, which is decidedly anti-woman. And we cannot kind of ignore that. I am hearing these frames of conversation that essentially boil down to boys will be boys. It essentially boils down to, you know, should one act that you have taken in high school or when you were younger impact what you're able to do in your future? And what I would respond to the GOP is that I would say, well, for people who have been assaulted, for people who have been violated, we never get to neutralize that. We never get to clear that from the record in favor of having a clean future. And so I think what we're seeing here is that the GOP has not only lost its way, it's gone backward into the dark ages. And they are being very explicit that they not only do not believe survivors, but that in fact, they believe that women, and particularly women who have been assaulted or violated or survivors of sexual assault and sexual violence, are a impediment to moving their agenda forward. And so we should all just be very clear about that. This isn't, you know, about tactics to take down Trump. This is really about exposing the real agenda of the GOP and being very clear that they have consolidated themselves around an agenda that is decidedly anti-woman and that certainly is decidedly anti-dignity. With that being said, do I think that we as a progressive movement have moved forward? And I would say we are taking important steps forward. The fact that so many men stood up in support of Anita Hill, in support of Dr. Blasey Ford, is a testament to how we are moving forward. We called for 1,600 men to be a part of this campaign to stand up and encourage other men to stand up in support of these survivors and all survivors. And what we found, in fact, was that more than 4,000 men stood up. Mm. And what we've done is we've kept the campaign open so that even more men can stand up. Because if you're a man that is watching these hearings and you don't feel disgusted in your gut, something is very wrong. But there are many, many, many men that are watching these hearings and that are not just upset for the women in their lives who they love, but they are upset for the survivors in their lives that they love, that have been interrogated in these ways, perhaps not on national television, but certainly in police interrogation rooms, in living rooms across the country, in churches and places of worship, in people's workplaces. And I think what we have found is that if we work together as people of goodwill, good conscience, and good integrity to say that we will not go backwards and that we can stop this today, I do think that we will see progress that we have been hoping for and working for a very long time.
Rebecca, your thoughts?
Oh, there's so much to say about the situation. It's interesting to think of the kind of constrained, constricted things we're allowed to hear in the Senate hearing versus the million woman strong Greek chorus of women coming forward with their own stories about sexual assault and why they didn't come forward. And we're seeing that all over again with, you know, it's certainly the death threats and harassment, discrediting, et cetera, certainly confirm why a woman wouldn't want to come forward. And we haven't even gotten through this hearing yet.
Yeah, and again, you know, haven't heard or had the opportunity to hear from Deborah Ramirez, Julie Swetnick, other women who also have testimony that supports the testimony that we're hearing from Dr. Blasey Ford. And actually, you know, Alicia, I'd like to ask you, as a survivor, you know, the act of having to be there by herself, Dr. Blasey Ford, as the sole woman essentially representing, you know, other women who have made accusations against the same person, Brett Kavanaugh, in such a obviously national stage, the entire, I think it's probably not an exaggeration to say, you know, much of the nation and the world are watching. You know, what does that evoke for you, having her in, trying to imagine being in that position?
Alicia Garza, that
I'm
was
so sorry. I'm here. What it evokes for me is extreme solidarity and compassion for every survivor who has ever been courageous enough to tell a